This episode, we're going to talk about Chris Sale, the White Sox, Red Sox, Nationals, and Adam Eaton. But first, the Padres. I recorded this the other night. I'm going to play this, then I'll be right back.
Yo, so it's 2 a.m. I'm on my way home from the club, and I was checking the Twitter there, and I seen that the Padres are doing Padre-like things. And this is why, at Cap Figure, they're our official team. And, like, they are a hedge fund of mutt retards. If that front office has jobs and they run a baseball team, there's no reason that Tom and I can't have hope. And you guys, too, listening, if you have a brain. So Tyson Ross, who's been their ace for the last 4 years, got a non-tender, meaning that he's going to be a total free agent, and they could have kept him under team control, arbitration eligible. He made $9.9 million last year, and he only pitched 5 1/3 inning because of a shoulder injury. So he's going to make $11 million next year. This is a guy who in 2014 and 2015 had 195 and 212 strikeouts. He had a FIP of like 3 and under 3. He does walk a lot of guys, but he's their best pitcher. And he's at least the number 3 on every other team in baseball, pitching to his 2014 and 15 self, which seems to be his true self. And maybe the Padres think it will be different, but I don't think so. I think the Padres are just tanking, but they're tanking too much. They don't need to be this bad. They're just going to hurt themselves because moves like this are so stupid and transparent, and you can't give absolutely no reason to be good. You're still going to end up being the worst team in baseball. But as far as on the field, there is no excuse for it. Like, if they want to act like they're trying to be good anytime soon, it's inexcusable. You got rid of Big Game James, who is the inning-eater, pitch-to-contact type of pitcher we hate at Cap Figure, and Drew Pomeranz they got rid of. So their whole rotation is a bunch of guys you've never heard of with, like, 5 ERAs and 1.5 whips. So anyway, the Padres are just retarded. I had to react instantly, even though I'm coming home from the club. All right, I'm in the street. People are looking at me like I'm a crazy person. I'm next to a bunch of dumpsters by the supermarket on my block. All right, Cap Figure Podcast. Holler.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Yeah. Cap Figure Podcast. Episode 23. So, did you like my instant hot take, Tom?
I do. 23, we're on Jordan's number.
I made a couple of assertions about Cap Figure feels this way. Cap Figure feels this way. Did I misrepresent your opinions on the Padres at any point there? Anything you'd like to clarify?
No, I think you're pretty spot on. And in case something does go wrong, you'll be hearing from my lawyers.
Well, yeah, like we get a lawsuit from the Padres or something. They would hire like a TV lawyer, like Binder and Binder, because they're so stupid. So there's bigger news though in free agency. But wait, real quick, actually, before we get to like Chris Sale and the stuff I teased at the intro, we were debating like why Tyson Ross. You were saying you think they did it just because they're cheap, or what were you saying before we went on air?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably, it's one of two reasons. One is they're not going to be a contending team this year, and if you're going to send him to arbitration, a lot of times the arbitration process, they are, I guess they're compassionate towards injuries, so I guess the Padres probably thought if he went to arbitration, they would have to pay him, you know, $12 million, a bump up from last year. So I think that they're just, one, trying to avoid paying him,
Yeah, I cut myself out of that. I was saying maybe the owner is just so cheap, but or they're tanking. They're just tanking. But
yeah, and I mean the smaller reason, which probably has less to do with it, is they might be trying to open up the spot on the 40-man roster.
Yeah, but like with him.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's that's not your best starter. You don't open up a spot on the 40-man roster with your best pitcher. So anyway. There's been crazy free agency stuff left and right. Our heads will explode if we try to talk too many things at once. So today, this episode, we're going to focus on the two big deals that the White Sox have made. The Adam Eaton deal and the Chris Sale deal, which I'll review in a moment. And then we're going to talk about the implications for those three teams. Is that cool with you, Tom? I'm acting like we didn't already decide this.
What are you talking about? I thought we were talking about the Cubs.
All right, yo. So it looked like it was who was leading to get Chris Sale. It looked like the Nationals were going to get him, right? And then next thing you know, the Red Sox trade for him, and they give up Yoan Moncada and Michael Kopech. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, Michael Kopech.
And then two other guys. But Moncada is like the number one overall prospect in MLB's top 100. Kopech number 30 in the top 100. Moncada is like MLB ready, second base, third base, right?
Yeah, I mean, the best kind of comparable I could even come up with. I mean, I remember watching him in the Futures game, and I was just so scared because I thought he was going to be a Red Sox, and I was just watching this guy hit. And he's a switch hitter. He's either going to play second or third base. He has the bat to move to like one of the corner outfield spots too. This guy is just like a physical specimen, but also he's just so polished. He to me kind of looks like Robinson Cano, but a switch hitter.
Well, get more into him in a minute. But that's he's the number one overall prospect for a reason. The other deal the White Sox made, within 24 hours, was with the Nationals, and apparently this was this package the Nationals were offering for Chris Sale, minus one player. The White Sox gave away Adam Eaton, and they got in return Lucas Giolito, the number 3 in the top 100, and Ronaldo Lopez, the number 38 in the top 100, and Dane Dunning, all three pitchers, the top two, throw 100 miles an hour. And then obviously the pieces they gave up are both like both Chris Sale and Adam Eaton have in common that they have really team friendly deals and like they're 5-win players. But so the order we're going to do this, we're going to talk about like the White Sox and where they're at, and then the Red Sox and the Nationals. So the White Sox just basically rebuilt their farm much like the Yankees did in this season, but even faster with greater prospects. No, this is pretty amazing that they did this.
Yeah, and I think the Yankees are sort of a comparable for that story. I mean, the White Sox inherently are very different from the Yankees because
they have to let their prospects grow. They can't get the prospects and then flip them for big contract players, right?
Exactly. And they're the second team in a big market. I mean, they're competing with the Cubs. So the way you sort of saw the White Sox trying to operate for a number of years, and they did it with mild success, was they would go after these big-name players, and then if that didn't work out, they would just keep trading all of their prospects for someone like, you know, Todd Frazier.
Or like James Shields, even though they didn't give up a lot. And they got to have the Padres still eat his contract.
Exactly.
That's a bad example, but that's a time that they shouldn't have been going for it, is what I mean, and they did.
Right, and so they just kept digging themselves in a bigger hole. I mean, their farm system going into, I guess, last weekend, I mean, the bottom two spots are the Marlins and the Angels, like unanimous across the board.
You mean,
for experts.
Just to be clear, in farm system rankings.
Yeah, the worst two farm systems. And then the White Sox were somewhere in that 26 to 28 range. So, I mean, they were really, they had nothing coming up the pipeline. So I guess it was a pretty easy decision for them to either, you know, keep trying to dig this hole a little bit bigger. You know, the contracts and the value of these players that they could trade would just sort of keep going down. So I think it was the right time for them to sort of pull the trigger and do this rebuild. They have a lot of interesting players that other teams are going to want. And yeah, I mean, the players that they got back for Eaton and Sale, I mean, they basically jumped from the 26th ranked farm system to easily like a top 10 system now. They got a lot of elite talent in that farm system. I mean, including Moncada, who could be a potential all-star second base or third baseman. He could potentially be one of the best players in the game. And then Giolito, by all matters, is like supposed to be at worst the number two starting pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, now. Look, it's like I just said, I mean, I don't know. I don't watch prospects, but I you know, just going by the rankings, they added the number one, the number three, the number 30, and the number 38 out of the top 100. Like, you know what I mean? That's amazing. That's like top and middle additions. Both of these pieces they gave up, like, the reason they got such a big return is because both Adam Eaton and Chris Sale are, like, 27, and they're both team-controlled on their team-friendly deals for the next, like, 3 years minimum each. Chris Sale for the next three, Adam Eaton for the next, like, four minimum. But it's like, if you don't see yourself winning anytime soon, you know, it's like they were able to do what the Angels weren't able to do with these deals. And it's like, honestly, take stock of where they're at, which is what they couldn't do in the offseason last year, or else I don't think they would have signed Frazier. What the hell is his first name?
Todd Frazier. They traded for him. You know, it's really amazing because when Chris Sale was the first one that was moved, and apparently the two packages available were the one from the Red Sox, which they took. And then there was also the package from the Nationals, which included Giolito, Lopez, Dane Dunning. And then there was Robles, who's a center fielder. He wasn't included in the package for Adam Eaton. But so basically the White Sox...
It's like getting both showcases on the Price is Right. If you guess within $100, you win both.
Yeah, they got basically both big packages. And I would say any number of reasons the Eaton trade was just an absolute steal for the White Sox.
Well, I mean, I guess so. I mean, you know, there's two pitchers that throw 100 and obviously one that's ready right away. But, I mean, he's only making like $8 million a year or seven, and he's under team control till 2020. He's like 28. Analytics, you know, value him more than, like, just looking at his old box score stat lines.
Of course.
For the Nationals, like, I guess I would say that, yes, it seems like they lost the deal, you know, ranking it day one. But I forgot when I first heard the trade that they were in the McCutchen sweepstakes.
Yep.
So I don't know what the price they would have had to pay for a year or two of McCutchen, which is the most it would be on that deal at a higher price. But McCutchen's coming off a negative season war-wise, and Adam Eaton's coming off like a four-win season, a six-win season.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And the other is that this is a silly way to look at it when you're talking about farm systems, but if you look at the teams, like right now, you know, they have pitching, which again is stupid because you can never have enough. But I mean it in the sense like the Nationals, they get extra value out of if he plays a good center field, having a Trey Turner at shortstop. Correct. Like in a way, they gained a shortstop too in this deal,
right?
In a backwards way. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you know, if you were gonna say, would you rather have McCutchen or Eaton, I would say almost every fan would tell you they'd rather have McCutchen. But if you actually look at, you know, the production and what they bring to the table,
yeah, and
as
the age
well as,
and the trajectory and the contracts,
yeah, the surplus value on the contract, I think Eaton actually is the better player. The reason why it doesn't necessarily make sense to me is there were a couple of center fielders that were and still are available on the free agent market. So to me,
yeah, no, that's the biggest counter argument, and then that gets me every time. When you're a big market team, even though like they're willing to spend the money, Dexter Fowler, it's like giving up your top three prospect.
Yeah.
it is not worth it when you have the money to be able to sign a center fielder. It seems like extra diminishing returns as far as like giving up your future for like a little bit better of a fielder.
To me, that it was a little bit of a panicky type move too, because I'm even just thinking right now, right? Like Adam Eaton, okay, they gave up all of these players for that, but what would they have had to given up to get someone like Brett Gardner? I mean, you have a very similar contract to Eaton. They sort of do the same things. It's a shorter contract, but I don't think you would have had to give up anywhere near that package to get someone like Brett Gardner. I think this also, one of the ancillary effects of that deal to me, talking about the Nationals for a second, is I think they've pretty much conceded that they know that they're not going to have Bryce Harper after the 2018 season.
Yeah, I mean, I forgot about that, but yes, I mean, because Adam Eaton, even though on their website today it has him in at center field and that's the plan, he's played the whole outfield. He played right field most of last year, 121 games, and he played center like 43 games, and he was good at both. But yeah, I think that's a good point. I also think that like I said, he's 28. Both of these players are, Chris Sale and Adam Eaton, are 28 and 27. Like, they're not, it's so much more valuable than McCutchen to me, even though, like you said, the fans would rather have him. But for the age, for the years of controllability, I understand it. Yeah, he had a WAR last year, a 4.1 Adam Eaton. In 2015, 5.4, and 2014, 3.8. So for whatever that's worth, I mean...
No, I mean, you remember, I think even...
No, I'm sorry, 6.2 last year.
I think at the All-Star break, I think we were going through, putting together, like, our rosters of the best players, and I think I was looking at defensive WAR and then offensive WAR, and I was shocked that Eaton was, I'm almost positive, the top player in offensive WAR in the AL.
Or, like, it was also behind, you were asking me something like, who's number two in, like, win probability added or some other stat behind Zach Britton. Yeah, no, it's funny. I guess it's his D WAR was 1.8 last year. I don't know. I'm talking about stuff out my ass, like, because I don't fully understand WAR. It confuses me. But, you know, he walks like 60 times a year. He hits like 10 triples. He slugs like 420. He bats like 280. I mean, well, we're going in circles. But so let's talk about the White Sox for a little bit more before we go to the other deal. The White Sox were like, I don't know. Like, there was all these media reports with the Chris Sale stuff versus their Kenny Williams is his name. Their president or general manager, and that a lot of players didn't respect him or thought the White Sox were poorly run or that he's really bad to the players. So, like, in my head, I thought of the White Sox as a poorly run franchise, especially when they had an offseason and midseason looking like the Padres of 2 years ago, thinking that they were much closer than they were, and like that indicates like a really weak front office to me. But now my opinion has totally changed in two moves of them.
Yeah, I don't, and I think that's where this can get so tricky is, I mean, I don't necessarily totally respect them as a front office now for pulling the trigger on this, because to me, it's just like, they would have been idiotic not to have done what they did.
Right, all they have to do is answer the phone, be like, oh, you want Chris Sale? I'll hear you out, and then say yes when these amazing deals come. Oh, you want Adam Eaton? Okay.
Right, and you know, I know that this isn't the main reason, but if you're the second team in a big market like that, the fact of the matter is you are competing for fans, you're competing for dollars with that other team, and I mean, you really just, you can't compete with the Cubs at this moment, so.
Yeah, hope is the only valuable commodity you have. Like, on the field, you have no shot to compete with the Cubs for fans.
Right.
But you have a shot for, quote, like, the future and guys who throw 100. Right? Like, potential is exciting. All right, so let's talk about the Chris Sale deal. Obviously, last year, he had that big incident. He had two incidents. When what was the guy who wanted to bring his son?
Adam LaRoche.
Jesus Christ. Adam LaRoche. He, like, berated the front office in front of everybody and bugged out. Adam LaRoche, for anyone who doesn't remember, wanted to bring his son. He had it sort of unwritten in his contract that his son could be with him. He had part of it written in his contract, but he pushed it as far as it could go, where he had his now teenage son with him every day at spring training and every day in the clubhouse. And the team was like, look, you can't have him around. And there were reports that maybe some players were uncomfortable with it, and some were like, what the hell, I love this kid. And Chris Sale was one of them. So that's one. He like totally like divided the locker room and yelled at the front office in front of the team. And then obviously the incident with the alternate jerseys where they were wearing these like alternate jerseys one Sunday and Chris Sale was pitching and he didn't like it. He thought that it was too heavy and that it restricted his movement and he didn't like the material. And so he cut up the entire team's jerseys, or as many as he could get to, I guess. He cut up the White Sox jerseys, and he was still like crazy about it, like perspectiveless about it, I should say, when asked about it later, because he says it feels like this franchise doesn't care about winning. You know, they just want to sell jerseys. And obviously that is retarded if you think about it for 2 seconds, because without fans or making money, you don't have a job, you dingus. And we talked about that at the time. But I'm just illustrating that he was a clubhouse cancer, quote-unquote. Like, those two moves definitely do not look good for employers. But he's so good on the field that
they're willing to overlook that.
Yeah. So, like, you know, what about the Sale deal? Do you think this is, like, as good a package as they could get for him?
Yeah, I think that it was a good time for them to make this trade.
I didn't finish the point, but I'm surprised to some extent that they got as much as they did get, because I would suspect that those are pretty big red flags, and this feels like a deal he would have got. This feels like as good of a deal as he could get without having those incidents happen.
Yeah, and I think it's also market-driven. I mean, look at the free agent class of starting pitchers. Your best pitcher was Rich Hill, who's, what, 37 years old, and his best pitch is a curveball. So, I mean, the time was sort of right. I think any team that was looking to add a starting pitcher, there was just, you know, the demand was there, the supply wasn't. So even a player as good as Sale, you know, his value is only going to go down from this point. And, you know, this deal to me, I liked the Red Sox package more than the Nationals package, just because to me Moncada is that sort of difference maker superstar that they got. So yeah, the time was right. If I were a team acquiring him, I mean, obviously those are red flags, but I think those are the kind of things that if he was in a winning organization might not happen, or if there was a little bit more structure. I mean, the White Sox were obviously a mess last year.
Well, yeah, you could say that. And also, or even if he is the same guy, even just like, you know, the rhetoric of a change of scenery helps. Both deals feel like a little bit of a win-win, but this more so of the two deals feels like a win-win because, like you said, like Chris Sale coming to a different franchise and a winning franchise may help him. Also, the other thing is that Moncada, if he can play second base as well as he can play third, has way more value to the White Sox because Dustin Pedroia is only 33 and he had an amazing season last year, another renaissance. So, like,
right. And the Red Sox, I mean, they're just, their positions in the infield and in the outfield, they're just full. I mean, they have
except
Pedroia
for third base, but we'll talk about it in a second. But yeah, just this only works if you agree that Moncada is more valuable at second base.
Right.
Which any if your defense is neutral, your offense being great at second is obviously way more valuable than your offense being great at third.
Yeah, and he's a player that was at one point a shortstop, so I mean I wouldn't even totally count that out. I know the White Sox have a young player named Tim Anderson who was their best prospect. He's now their shortstop, but I wouldn't necessarily count out Moncada playing at short either.
So do you have the White Sox depth chart? Can you get it? Because I don't even know who besides like Abreu, Frazier.
Yeah, so they have Brett Laurie. Let's see.
Look it up. I'll ramble for a minute. So for the Red Sox, it's another like Rick Porcello deal, but not as extreme. Like, I forget every time I was hearing Chris Sale in the offseason, I forget slash never realize that he's 27. And it's not, it's similar to the Cole Hamels deal, except he's younger, where there's three more years on the deal and they're all team friendly. There's one more year at like $13 million and then a team option for 2018 and 19 at $13.5 and $14.5 million. And if Chris Sale is anything like what he's been, then those are going to be steal years. And additionally, he what the hell? Help me.
So the White Sox depth chart.
Who's their rotation?
Yeah, so I mean they have Quintana, Carlos Rodon, James Shields, Carson Fulmer. I mean, it's pretty bare after Quintana.
And who's their outfield now?
They have Melky Cabrera, Avisail Garcia, and then Charlie Tilson. I mean,
yeah, whatever. I mean, this is like what we thought. They're going to suck for a little bit, but they were never close. They were never as close as they were trying to act like they were last year.
Exactly.
So the thing that you were hinting at that we didn't get into and that you mentioned earlier is the Red Sox got rid of Travis Shaw also. So now that they got rid of Moncada, who's baseball ready, like he's going to play this year, right?
Yeah, I think he's going to be either on the Major League roster opening day or shortly thereafter.
Right. So the Red Sox now have to rely on Fatty Fatterson, Pablo Sandoval, who a report just came out. He looks really good. There's this like photo that just recently emerged of him looking all lean and sweaty. So he looks like he's lost weight, but you never know when donuts will creep up on you, man. But who knows? I mean, they managed to salvage the Hanley contract to get a positive wins production out of him. And if he may, like, they still don't have a DH right now on their depth chart on their site. They have Hanley Ramirez both at first and DH, but Pablo can play DH if he is really struggling. I mean, his value is in what a fielder he was.
Well, don't forget they also signed Mitch Moreland. So,
oh, I did forget.
He's going to be the first baseman. Hanley will probably play some first base, but also DH. I mean, yeah, they. If they weren't making any other moves up until this point, it looks fairly evident that they're comfortable with Sandoval at third. But that being said, I mean, there are a number of third basemen out there that are going to be available, so I wouldn't be surprised if the Red Sox made another move, depending on how comfortable they are with Sandoval at third.
Yeah, well, you got to see that photo. He really looks good. I mean, I know that's very silly analysis, but he basically was out with fatness. Like, just Google Pablo Sandoval right now, and then there's like an article from one day ago in the New York Times about how cute he looks. Like, he could be. I don't know. I would roll the dice with him, but I don't care. And then they also have Brock Holt, if not. So that's it. I mean, the Red Sox now, their rotation obviously is insane. And 2 years ago, it's funny to think about how horrible it was that they had just signed Rick Porcello, but there was no David Price or Chris Sale, obviously. And Rick Porcello had a horrible first season in Boston, and now he wins the Cy Young. They got him when he was 27. Now they signed David Price last year, and they have Chris Sale. And the other interesting thing is, of those three top like ace-ish power pitchers, only one of them is on a mega deal because, like I said, Chris Sale is making only $13.5 million, and Rick Porcello they got at a similar, maybe like $15 million. And for the Cy Young Award winner, two of those are great deals.
Yeah.
And then obviously their offense is amazing. And they have Craig Kimbrell, which I kept forgetting because you didn't get to see him in the playoffs because they were losing every game. So, I mean, that's it. We're almost done with this episode because there's 8 trillion other free agent things to get to that we'll do in the next episode. But you got something else to say? Do you see the photo?
I just did, yeah. That is, it's pretty shocking.
He's pretty sexy.
Yeah, what I will say, though, is, I mean, you know, the weight problem was an issue, but it wasn't as if he was really like hitting the lights out in Boston before that kind of came to the surface. Like, I almost think that just pushed it over the edge.
Well, yeah, that's why. And then, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's, like, not a great situation. I think the Red Sox would be smart to at least try him out there. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to have their eye to the third baseman market. And
yeah, no, you're right, because it's the Red Sox. They're not making moves like this and have such a good team assembled to just, like, risk it at a key position.
Right, and they're the kind of team where even if Sandoval puts together, like, you know, a decent couple months, I mean, they would be a team that wouldn't have a problem eating part of the salary and trading him, and then...
He wouldn't have a problem eating it.
Yeah, he wouldn't have a problem eating away the salary. But, I mean, you know, the other can of worms that's open now, like with the White Sox, is you have a lot of players on that roster that other teams are going to want. So I think business is not done for them.
Like who?
You have Jose Abreu.
Right.
Todd Frazier. Quintana is the obvious pitcher that's going to be moved. David Robertson.
I forgot about Quintana. He's a super valuable trade piece.
Absolutely.
You know, they can just have like a Braves farm system from last year in one offseason.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, even someone like Melky Cabrera or Brett Laurie, I mean, they're average, if not a little bit below average, major league players. But I wouldn't be surprised to come trade deadline, teams with a couple injuries, they would want them.
Yeah, Melky's worth a win or something. Like, I mean, he's good. His chin strap is very ugly. And Brett Laurie has those, like, spider elbows that are pretty trashy. But, yo, Todd Frazier is so cool, and he has bad posture like me, and I like that. But I don't like his player profile anymore. I thought I did, but every year, the first half of the season, he's, like, killing it. And then he starts to strike out and not hit to contact. And then he just, like, only tries for home runs.
I mean,
he's like a baby Chris Davis.
He hit 40 home runs last year, and his OPS was 767.
Yo, that is like, what's his name? The first baseman on the Brewers who just got cut.
Chris Carter?
Yeah, Chris Carter. That's like him. Like.
Yeah, to me, he's just a little bit of a better play, like a little bit of a better version of Chris Carter.
Yeah, like he plays third and stuff, but it's just, yeah, super low batting average and
on base percentage of .302. Like,
that's funny for a 40 home run guy. Like he's definitely getting enough pitches to walk. Right, you know what I mean? Like, they're not pitching it down the middle. He definitely needs to lay off. But he has so many base hits. It's related to his bad posture, I think, but in my head, I don't know if it's real, but he's, like, leaning forward, like, sliders away from him, and he, like, leans over the plate and bloops them over the shortstop's head. All right, so anyway, so that's it. That's it. We're going to keep doing this, like, two episodes a week, jump off. So
you got it.
Yo. So subscribe or leave a review, please. It's already on your phone and your iPhone. It's purple or pink. It says podcast.
Magenta. Peace.
Don't touch my magenta. Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one.